It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here in studio today on this absolutely glorious Saturday morning. And it's just, April has been just kind of a gift lately, but it usually is up here. And we'll hope we get more gifts along the way, like May and June.
I think we're going to get the gift of a big rainstorm this afternoon, though.
Could be. Did anybody get a little sprinkle Thursday night like we did?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen that much rain come down in one place in an hour, and it's still standing around in our neighborhood. But we needed it badly, so
yep.
Thank goodness. I didn't like the year that things were burning all around us, and this will prevent that. Anyway, enough of the weather. This is not a weather forecast. This is actually an economic realism course today. I just wish we could decide what side we're on.
I still can't decide.
This has been the strangest year, and I think it was perfectly exemplified this week when we came out of the chute, blah, and down. And Monday was okay, but then a couple days straight down. And then Thursday came, and it shot straight up, and Friday came, and it verified that. So here we are, up for the week, up for the month. Which, of course, we're supposed to be because April's a good month. And this is, after all, the end of April from a market standpoint. By the way, it's Financial Literacy Month, but don't use that the calendar change as a reason not to become more financially literate, because we all need it. Anyway, it was a very nice week, and we'll talk about that. But it's very, very close to May, and very early in May, there's something that we've been talking about that we want to bring up today. So you should take a listen and see if you want to do something about it.
Yeah, 1 week from tomorrow is the Joe 13 Golf Classic at Queens Harbor Yacht and Country Club. It's an event that's near and dear to our hearts as Joe, who is the in the name of the golf event, was a friend of ours. He was a young man, actually the brother of my son's best friend, who passed away from leukemia years ago, and this is in his honor. We're raising money for childhood cancer research at St. Jude's, and it's a great event. It sells out every year. We're almost sold out now. There's a few spots left, though. Just go on the website, joestrong.org, sign up. It's Sunday, May 7th, again at Queens Harbor. It's a really fun event. There's tons of good prizes. There's a raffle. You can win all sorts of cool things, like gift cards to Oku and some other great restaurants and things like that. So we'd love to see you out there. If you're a golfer, go ahead and go to joestrong.org and sign up.
Good. All right. And we'll repeat that. If anybody missed anything, we'll repeat it after the bottom of the hour break as well, because we don't have a bunch more opportunities to do anything about it. So we're going to try to push it until everybody fills up that last individual slot. It's a great way for a nominal amount of money that goes directly, 100% of it goes directly to a very good cause. And if you like to have fun and if you like to play golf, why not?
Definitely.
All right. Well, first off, I didn't welcome everybody yet. So all of you who are back here every week, the regulars, thank you so much for always tuning in. And you're the reason that we continue to do this here now. We have now finished another quarter of a year in our ninth year on air, which seems totally and absolutely impossible.
It really does.
I must have been a mere child when we started this.
I mean, you definitely had thicker hair.
Yeah, that part's true. Well, anyway, it goes by, and there's not a darn thing we can do about that except to try to put it to good use, and especially in honor of Financial Literacy Month. Hang around. You'll always learn something listening here. And if you're new and you've just found it, were told about it, or stumbled into it, we would love it if you'd stick around for the whole hour. And again, you'll learn something. The rules are very simple here. We talk about what we want to talk about until the phone rings, when you pick it up and dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK, and then we will put you on air immediately, and you can ask your question, or you can state your topic, or just discuss anything that's going on out there, because there is very little that money doesn't touch in your life and our life and everybody else. So don't think you're ignorant by asking a question, because I guarantee you there are people listening that don't know the answer if you don't. And we'll share the wealth, so to speak. All right. This week, as I said, it was kind of a weird week again. Adam just told me that the week seemed to really drag for him, and it seemed to really fly for me. So, because it depends what side you're on, but it was very strange, and I'm going to let you encapsulate the thing.
Yeah, it closed out a pretty decent month on a high note on Friday. We started the day down and pretty much just made steady progress throughout the day, and actually closed on a pretty high note. For the week, the indexes posted moderate gains. NASDAQ was up the most at 1.3%. Both the Dow and the S&P were up 0.9%. NASDAQ almost, I mean, I've never seen it so close to completely flat for a month. The percentage was 0.0. I think the actual gain was 4.7 points on the NASDAQ.
It didn't even register from going out with a decimal point.
Which is unusual. But the S&P gained 1.5%, and the Dow was up 2.5%. And so not all in all, pretty good month of April. And curious to see what May will bring. The way things are going, you just don't know.
We are historically going into that. In fact, today's trivia question is about going into May. We'll get there after the break, which is not happening just yet.
Okay. There was some weaknesses in other areas during the month. Small cap stocks didn't do great. They lost 2.8%. Mid cap stocks were down just 0.8%. And then within the S&P, there was a few negative sectors as well. Consumer, discretionary, and industrials were both down over 1%, while materials and materials had very small losses. Consumer staples, communication services, financials, and healthcare were all up over 3% for the month, though, so that's where all the gains came. And for the year, there are four sectors that are down, but all less than 3%. Well, two sectors, technology and communication services, are already up over 20% this year. So pretty strong start for those two sectors. The other part of the investment world that is strong is international stocks. They continue to rally and even outperform their U.S.-based counterparts. April was particularly strong, with the U.K. gaining over 5%, France and Italy up over 4%, and India, Brazil, and Germany all up over 3%. However, it's Mexico that continues to lead the way higher for the year. It's up over 23% this year alone. Pretty crazy.
That's because they're getting rid of all their deadbeats.
It's one way to look at it, I guess.
It is incomprehensible to me when you look at some of the places that are doing well. But I don't dictate the market. I just follow it.
Yeah. They can't fight the tape.
No, and I know that Mexico is still going to be a recipient of a lot of our investment, too, based, if nothing else, on the new trade agreement, which we've talked about a bit. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Pay some bills. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have been kind of shaking out this market to see if we can make heads nor tails out of it. I'm going to just ask Adam to pick up where he left off after I give the trivia question, which is brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. You've probably all heard it, if you've done any investing to speak of, sell in May and go away, come back again in November. It's a very common adage, I guess, and there are probably people who do it routinely. We are not among them, but I thought I'd try to take a look and see if there's anything to it. And what I found was that last year, had you sold in May and come back in November, you would have passed up a 9% gain in the market. Not a good idea. So
that's pretty incredible considering what happened last year.
Yep. Yeah, that was the weird part, because last year was anything but a good year.
Oh, it's terrible.
Now, what would have happened if you did sell in May and go away and come back in November the year before? And I'm not going to even give you a hint. How about that?
Okay.
All right. Back to the market. It's upsies and downsies this week.
Yeah, there certainly was. Commodities have been have not been headed in the right direction recently. They posted another slight loss this week. There were some highlights, though. Silver was up almost 4%. Agricultural commodities up 2.5%. So it was interesting that the basket was down, but some of the larger ones were up. Even natural gas posted a 1% gain. It's still down over 50% this year, though, and over 70% since last August. And
oil's been everywhere. From way up to not way up, anyway.
Yeah, I think it was somewhere around 74 when I checked on Friday.
It's having been over 80 just in the last few days.
Yeah, but it really range trading between that 70 and 85-ish.
Yeah. It's like watching a game of Pong.
Mm-hmm. Fixed income also rallied a bit during the week as rates dropped. Despite the last 6 months in the market being fairly positive, investors are still really bearish on the stock market. For the last 16 months, investors have been more bearish than bullish, which isn't quite a record number, but it's pretty close. The record is 18 months, and that was set during the Great Recession in 2008. However, on a weekly basis, we did set a record recently at 44 straight weeks of bearish sentiment, but it was broken by a couple of weeks earlier this year. We're now at another streak of 10 weeks of bearish sentiment. You may think all of this bearishness would be bad for the market, but in reality, it's a pretty strong contrarian signal that generally sees the market go up when it flashes. So the fact that we are 6 months into a minor rally with all the bearishness kind of proves that theory.
It doesn't lend itself to predictions for the future very well.
No, it doesn't. Nothing does right now. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that we're in this little rally, I think, is that we're pretty well into earnings season now, and we saw a bunch of mega cap stocks report this week. And while the season started a bit slow, it's improved to pretty strong results. So far, 75% of companies are beating on their earnings estimates, which is a really strong number, and 68% are beating on revenue forecasts, which is also a strong result. We also have the same number of companies raising and lowering guidance, so there isn't a clear trend for the future either. And just a week or two ago when I reported on those numbers, there was a significantly more revisions downward than upward, and that wasn't a great start, but I did mention that it was early in the season. Now we've had a lot more companies report, and we're getting closer to even. It's not bad.
No, we don't need all that stinking negativity in our lives, do we?
No, definitely not. there was some economic data that came out this week, and it's really hard to interpret it. New single-family homes increased 9.6% in March.
Despite these interest rates.
9.6%. The ITB, which is an ETF that tracks the home builders, is sitting at a 52-week high. Interest rates are in the sixes. Mortgage rates are in the sixes. And prices haven't come down materially. Mm-hmm. Do people go out and buy houses during a recession?
Mostly no.
Yeah, I can't figure it out. But the housing market has remained very strong. The consumer has remained pretty strong. New orders for durable goods rose 3.2% in March, another sign that maybe things aren't as bad as we think. And the GDP report for the first quarter came in at a 1.1 annual rate. That wasn't a great number. The expectation was 1.9%, but it's still positive. And it doesn't appear that we were in a recession in the first quarter. Are we in one in the second quarter? Very possibly, but there's no guarantee of that either.
If you take the data from the quarters and you lay it out month by month, you'll see trend lines still headed way down, though.
For sure, and almost everything except for core inflation, which has remained stubbornly flat.
Yeah, and that brings up the obvious question. What will the Fed do?
Well, I think it's all but a done deal that it's going to be a quarter point in a week or two whenever they do the next hike. But beyond that, more up in the air. I think a lot of people are expecting a pause, but I could see them doing another quarter point rate hike at this point. Unless they start seeing that core PCE come down, I'm not sure.
It doesn't seem to be happening. There's nothing in that core number. Core just simply means that they consider food and energy volatile, so they strip that out to see what things are doing in general. And prices are going up. In fact, I have a little piece of paper here. Guess who's getting affected by inflation? This one kind of hit me because it's almost an inflation-proof environment. McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
McDonald's is having some trouble because they're raising prices like crazy, of course. They had a great first quarter. Same store sales were up 12.6%. And for 2022, it was 11.8%. This is an astounding growth rate for a humongous corporation. But now what they're seeing is because your Big Mac, Quarter Pounder, all that costs a lot more, people are skipping an item. So you might get a meal, but you don't get a dessert. Or you might get a burger, but you don't get fries. So they're watching the same store sales struggle to survive and still have a growth rate. But when you look at the absolute prices they're charging and think back just a few, very few years, it's no wonder.
Yeah.
If food everywhere is just so out of control, cost-wise and inflation-wise, and you, if you're really good, if you're really careful, Sarah and I have been watching this really carefully right now, there is a very good set of things that a lot of people really like out there that we've been finding some real bargains in pork. And you know, we do a lot of Costco stuff. Pork at Costco right now is such a bargain. If you really want to feed yourself well at a nominal dollar, I guess, per person, it's the best deal I can see out there. Then you look over to the beef column, and it's directly opposite. It's just going up like crazy. So I don't know why it's so spotty in certain things, but I guess you could say it, like all commodities, some go up and some go down.
Yeah, well, the great thing about that is it changes consumer buying habits, yep. And that tends to self-correct based on people buying more pork and less beef. So I think that's probably what we'll see happen there.
Yeah. Well, fundamentally, the Fed isn't going to be happy until we cut the current inflation rate in half, the current reported inflation rate in half.
Yeah, some of that is going to happen naturally.
Right.
And if you look at all the charts, I mean, all the charts for inflation, it's very clear that inflation has peaked and has either turned over or stayed steady.
Yeah,
and so it just depends which one you're looking at. But some of them are showing some pretty major decreases, while mm-hmm. some of them are very flat. And unfortunately, a lot of the flat ones are the core ones that the Fed really looks at. But some of the more volatile ones are actually headed in the right direction. So I do think we're past peak inflation, and that's great news for the market. But is it enough for the Fed is really the biggest question that remains.
And remember, the inflation rate is a change rate. It is not a price level. The price level that we're at now is very high. You would have to have a component of disinflation, I mean, to get some of those down there. So if the inflation rate goes to 2%, but it's on the base of prices we're paying right now, you're still going to be getting your wallet picked every time you turn around.
But do you want deflation? I mean, is that going to be – that's not good for the economy either.
I'm only talking from the eyes of the Fed.
How
are they going to get it down there? But look at your gas bills. They may fluctuate a little bit. Look at your grocery bills. They're way high. But look at some big things like homeowners insurance, car insurance. And the level of prices in those things has gone so out of control that I don't see any way that those prices are going to back down, do you?
Well, especially not in homeowners insurance, because unless you see house prices come down, the replacement cost of these homes has gone up 30% or so in the last couple of years, yep. It makes sense that you would pay more for homeowners.
Sure,
insurance.
And look at all the insurers who've had to pay out big-time claims over the last few years, and it's kind of scary. The only way people are going to keep up with that is by getting raises,
which
and they are running
inflation.
Below. Yeah, what they give adds to inflation, but what they get is less than current inflation. So everybody's just a little bit worse off. There's been something like 27 months now where real wages are actually dropping, and that is not good for the future. So put that in the category of not so good. We'll wrap this up in just a few seconds. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I remind everybody that the phone lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question is out there. An old market adage says you go away in May and come back in November because you won't make any money in the summertime. It's all made in the last couple of months and the first few months in the year. Not always true. In fact, last year, had you done exactly that, you would have given up a 9% increase that was badly needed last year. So it would have been a really stupid thing to do. What would that number have been the year before if you had gone away in May and come back in November? And I'm not giving you any hints yet. Okay, do you want to just wrap up anything? The only thing I've got left really is, well, two things. First off, I want to reiterate how confusing it is to try to guess where the market is going with everything that's going on. The other one is this is a big week coming up.
It is. Tons of earnings coming out this week. So
it's a humongous earnings. It's the Fed meeting, and it's jobs week. So if you think this week was volatile, keep your seatbelt on next week.
Yeah, it's true. That's the way it goes, though. And we're starting the historically volatile May month. So that's just to top it all off.
Oh, yeah. How much more fun can we have, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, fun. I love seeing 500, 600, 700 point swings. It's just so much fun to be an advisor at that point. But, you know, we try to do the right thing, and so far it's hanging on pretty well because –
Yeah, it's been a good year. It really has. The S&P is up a decent amount. Our portfolios are up a decent amount. I really can't complain outside of just being a little frustrating because it's hard to figure out what's going on. But it's been a decent year.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that the gains we've had have so far just been replacing what we used to have.
Well, but that's the nature of investing. Nothing
exactly
you can do
right.
about that.
No, absolutely right. Okay, I've just got all kinds of stuff to talk about. I don't even hardly know where to start, but let's start this way since this is the first day that you can buy the new I-bonds. And you probably remember that I-bonds started gaining popularity last year when the interest rate assigned to them was 9.62, I believe, which was the bargain of a lifetime, basically. And when that went away in November, it was replaced by another very good number at 6.89%. So no biggie. Well, the time to buy I-bonds expires when May is coming up. And as usual, Thursday night and Friday, it was very hard to get on the Treasury Direct website for some strange reason.
Shocking.
It just doesn't seem to work. So your orders will probably get placed on Monday when the new rate has come in. Little bit of good news, little bit of bad news on this one. We are going down to 4.3% overall. But the one thing that changed this time, and it's going to continue to do this, I believe, is that the base rate, which has been zero for about as long as I can remember, the 9.6 and the 6.89 and so on, have all been the inflationary component. Because if you listen to the show enough, you know I-bonds pay two different things, the basic rate or the coupon rate on the bond itself and then the inflation adjustment. Well, that went up last time to 0.4. Nobody really basically talked about that, but it rose this time to 0.9. So it's starting to happen where you're getting a guaranteed better rate on I-bonds than you have in a decade or better. So if you're thinking about jumping into some I-bonds at 4.3, you know that 0.9 of that is a fixed rate over the years now. So depending on your outlook for the next few quarters, half years, you may want to think about it. It's unfortunately, or fortunately, depends which side of the fence you're on, It has been a much more interesting time to be a fixed income investor in whole or in part. In fact, the old 60-40 portfolio, which was getting kicked around like an old mule for quite a long time now, it's kind of back in favor, and it's coming up. And that's because the fixed rate is starting to come up and bonds are coming back into favor. Most people have heard along the way, we've talked about this for quite some time, the acronym TINA, there is no alternative. Well, they've changed that now to TIA, T-I-A-A. There is an alternative. And Adam knows this better than anybody. We've been buying a lot of fixed income products for our clients' portfolios. You probably have a better handle on which ones are the best deal right now. So.
The best deal right now is it's all short term, 2 years or less. And basically between treasuries and CDs issued by some non-callable CDs issued by some of the bigger banks, Wells Fargo's actually been having some great deals. You can get in the 5 to 5.2% range on both of those really short-term treasuries or going out a little bit further on the CDs. And so locking that 18-month CD in for 5.1, 5.2%, just to me, it's a no-brainer with the potential for rate cuts at the end of this year if we do see a recession. So I think it's a great deal. We've been buying a ton of them.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about financial institutions. We know what happened at the two banks so far. And now First Republic, is that the name of the one that's suffering right now?
Yes, that is. They might actually, I saw a report, they might get bought by, I think J.P. Morgan was looking at them. Mm-hmm. There were some other.
That could happen as soon as the opening of business Monday.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on this weekend of negotiating there. Well, in case people are worried about every bank and every regional bank, there it always helps, I think, to point out that there have been differences between your regular bank and the ones that are having trouble. First Republic was very much like the other two failures. They spent their whole time soliciting, successfully, I might add, the very high net worth people and the very big deposits. And we've talked about this problem before. The FDIC only guarantees $250,000 per account registration. 500 for a couple. And the problem we got with the Silicon Valley Bank was that certain companies and people had way, way, way more than that deposited in the bank, and it wasn't FDIC guaranteed. So the government came along and in their inimitable style said, oh, well, it's okay. We'll just back it all for this bank. Well, now we got First Republic coming along. They got bailed out from a deposit standpoint. And here's what happens first. I should back up a little. When the rumors start about the run on the bank, so to speak, people with great big deposits pull them out. Well, all of a sudden, due to the fractional banking rules that our banks operate with, when you pull out $10 billion or something like that, that has a ripple effect along a lot of accounts, which they might have loans against. That's what has been happening to the First Republic. So now they're looking to investors, or looking to the government, I say, will you guarantee now these big accounts for us like you did for Silicon Valley? And the answer, of course, is, well, we can't do that. FDIC doesn't have enough money in its loan pool. All right, then why did you do it in the first place? And now you're discriminating. This has caused a lot of concern. And now before the negotiations came, Bank of America and J.P. Morgan, I believe it was, they combined and they deposited $30 billion into that bank to try to stem the concerns of people that were pulling their money out, and it will probably be bought. Now, I'm suggesting a couple of things. One of them is that the FDIC needs to get a really big revamp of how business is done.
They really do. It just doesn't make any sense that a business would be limited to a $250,000 insured deposit. You can't even operate a business of any size with that small amount of money.
Now, do I want all those big corporations and wealthy people who have tens of millions in the banks, do I want to guarantee them with taxpayer money? No. So, again, in our imperial federal government, it said, well, it won't cost the taxpayers a cent because we're going to change the way FDIC gets money from the banks. In other words, banks are going to raise their fees because the FDIC is going to raise their requirements.
Yeah.
Well, who pays the fees at every bank in America?
Yeah.
Could it be the taxpayers?
It's the same argument as the, we need to raise taxes on businesses.
Yeah.
Who pays taxes on businesses? Consumers who buy things from those businesses pay
the taxes.
Never
been a business that paid any taxes.
No.
They're unpaid tax collectors, but that's it. So we've got a little more shakeup to do out there. But my other point is, this is not something you ought to be worrying about unless you have more than $250,000 in any account. I'd start shopping around a little bit and spreading the wealth.
But as a bare minimum, they need to at very least link it to inflation, index the $250,000 amount. That amount came from a 2008 decision.
Yeah.
Inflation alone would put that closer to $350,000 today. It needs to be done.
And believe me, there's a heck of a lot of people between $250,000 and $350,000 who would be a lot better
for
off.
For sure.
As corporate money goes, that's not a big deal. But as individual money goes, it's a very big deal. I've been ragging on this for a long time. The government indexes what they want to index for inflation. And some things, they just don't bother. And this is the kind of squeeze you get into. And it's ridiculous. So, as usual, you point your finger at government, you're probably going to be right. More on this in a minute. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we're going to go to the phones after I point out one more ridiculous little government fix for what's ailing us all. If you have a good credit score and a nice down payment, and you go out to get a mortgage now, you could pay a little more for that so that they can credit all that money to someone who's trying to buy a house with a lower credit score and without a big down payment.
Yeah,
because spreading the wealth is what they do.
I read about this. I think it's going to get challenged, and I don't think it's going to stand up.
But just throwing this stuff out. I'm so sick of the...
It's so annoying.
...class envy and jealousy and so on. Good morning, Chuck.
Hi, guys. That was my exact topic.
No kidding.
Elaborate. In their infinite wisdom that President Harris and Vice President Biden are going to raise the fees on people that have good credit and punish people that have good credit that pay their bills and give people a break on people that have a 500 credit score?
Yes, I absolutely can, because it is 100%. It in line with everything else that they have done since they took over.
Yep.
It's 100%. There's no, it's always the same terrible ideas that they just recycle in different ways. And this is just another one of them.
Yeah. Punishing success is the way of life. And I don't get it. If you want to punish something, you'll get less of it. You know, Reagan came up with that thing. If you want more of something and you want less of something, all that, and the old government thing, they're always here to help. And now I agree with Adam 100% that this will not pass constitutional muster, in my opinion. But the fact that it's out there is still kind of dangerous.
It's just so irritating. Your credit score is something that you earn by being responsible. And therefore, it's based on the risk of that institution loaning money to you. And so the fact that they want to take those individuals who do the right thing and punish them, it just goes against everything that I believe.
Yep, I agree. So,
well, what bank is going to give somebody a mortgage if they have a 500 credit score? They got to be out of their mind.
that depends.
They should
be. Is there a gun to their head? Because under the Community Development Act from Jimmy Carter that was enhanced a couple of times, if you don't do that, you are not going to be happy because they're going to come down on you.
Well,
remember that one?
And it just shows that we never learn anything. I mean, it was not that long ago that we got in a world of trouble by doing essentially the same thing that they're trying to promote now.
Yeah, they were given mortgages. It wasn't so much a gun to the head mortgage that they were given out those days. It was much more of a, we will de-risk you the second it's closed by buying that mortgage. So you don't care if the person's going to pay it back. You sell it and do another one. Mortgage brokers were making a fortune for a couple of years, and the quality of mortgage paper out there just collapsed. And along with it, everything about our society took a big hit, and especially the market. So they never learn. So, Chuck, did you want to take a shot at the trivia question?
Can you repeat?
Sure. It's about go away in May and come back in November, which a lot of people apparently really believe in. If you had done that last year, you would have missed a 9% gain. If you had done it the year before, what would the change be that you would have missed? Direction and percent.
I'll say lost 5%.
You know what? I'm going to give you that. It was lost 6, and I always put a plus or minus 1 on these things. You got the direction right and nailed it. How about that?
Oh, that's totally a guess. I didn't even look it up online.
Great. You know, the funny thing with this type of question is that it shows things instead of showing things that you want to say, here, there's something real positive about this or whatever, this just shows that it's random. And you shouldn't listen to those things, which I guess is a positive message, isn't it? Sort of.
Yeah.
Don't be swayed by these things. Well, that's cool. We'll put you on hold and get your stuff. And Mr. Bales will provide you with a little something fun. Probably, we doing Publix cards?
Publix, yeah.
Okay. So nobody doesn't want a Publix card, so to speak.
Oh, that's great.
All right. Thank you. Talk soon.
Great show.
Thanks. Bye. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
What's happening?
Well, other than an HOA that's relentless, not much otherwise. I just called to first to apologize. We were talking last week, uh-huh. and we got disconnected uh-huh. when I had mentioned to you about my deferred comp.
Yeah.
First minimum withdrawal will take place next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them up to see if I was correct about how to do it, and you were correct, like you usually are. even though there is a sum in the 401k and a sum in the 457, they're going to send me two forms because you have to. I'm not sure I understand that, but since
There he is.
What am I saying? The table of how many years.
The RMD
to
table.
To use as the divisor will be the same.
Yes. That's based on your age.
Something at 14, let's say the factor for argument's sake is 14. Hitting each figure at 14, dividing by 14, would still be the same as adding up both figures.
That is exactly right.
By, yeah, yes. But you were correct that you have to hit them individually, so they're going to send me two forms out. So thank you for that.
Sure. Now, you can have five different IRAs.
And do it all from one.
And you can do it from one.
Yep, but certain types of plans don't allow that.
Yep. And the
that's interesting, because the deferred comp is all in just one plan,
mm-hmm.
and it's just divided either in a 401k, a 457, or I think a 403b. But
they operate in different rules. That's
the
nature of it. One thing, one thing I would observe, 457 money is at risk. If the entity that holds that money goes under, then you are not guaranteed that account to go to you. Your 401k is absolutely guaranteed to be yours. So when you have different rules, you have to do things different ways. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that very much, especially since you would think that being it's the city of New York, but I had to drive to Palm Coast to hear a demonstration by Aetna, because the city of New York, in the guise of saving $600 million, wants to take all their retirees out of original Medicare and their supplementary plan and put them in an Aetna Medicare PPO. So
isn't that special?
That'll be a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't have to do it if the leadership in New York City and New York State wasn't abysmal.
But you get the government you vote for. Yeah, another aside, if you want to de-risk yourself on the 457, you can roll that into a rollover IRA and control it yourself.
Mm.
Just something to think about.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Great show, and thanks for all your help.
Thanks so much.
All right. Have a good weekend. Bye.
That one's not on yet.
I'm still showing it lit up, but the button is not working. I did want to mention something. There is an election coming up here.
There is for mayor and a few other things. And if you're in Jack's Beach, there's a height limit restriction issue that has become a hot topic. And there was two other things on the ballot that I cannot recall right now, but I'll try and sum it up next week.
It is no secret to anybody listening here that we are conservative people by nature and that a lot of our audience is conservative. If you are adamant about keeping a socialist out of your mayor's office, act like it and vote. One third of people vote in these types of elections, and you are at the mercy of everyone else. Good morning. I don't have a name. Can you identify yourself?
Good morning. My name is Dylan, 30 years old, homeowner, federal employee.
Okay.
Question is, before the markets really hit, I transferred my investments into more secure investments like the G Fund, TSP, Treasury Securities.
Mm-hmm.
My own personal investments are in money market mutual funds. I'm wondering right now, I can tell I kind of missed out on some of the gains on the S&P this year, but I think we all kind of know something's going to happen pretty bad coming in the near future. I'm curious, am I smart enough just to step back and maybe just wait and see, or jump back in?
Take it.
That makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Dylan, that's great that you did miss out on the downside last year by transferring your money over to those safer investments. Congrats on that. Honestly, the hardest thing at that point is getting back in, because the timing never feels right, no matter what happens. And and there's always something out there that can convince you to stay out of the market. But the good news is right now you're going to get about 5% return on some of those investments without taking the risk. So do you jump back in? I would at least jump in a little bit. Kind of agree with you, maybe not full bore, but yeah, it's getting back in is always the hardest step. And unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd love to talk further.
I want to throw in one thing before we have to go, though, and you can please feel free to call next week.
Thanks for your help.
Wait, one more thing. The most important piece of information you gave us is your age. You're only 30. Don't be afraid to be aggressive.
Yep, I agree.
All right, thanks. And like I said, call back anytime. All right, take care.
Okay, thank you.
Now, if you've got 30, 40 years to invest in the market, it is not going to serve you well to be that conservative. So I agree with you in every respect.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Vanuy Financial Hour.